Blog Talk Radio.
There we
go.
I know, right? Okay, it didn't, it wasn't letting me unmute us there for a little bit. So nobody really heard our first intro here if you're listening to us live, but hey, that's okay. You'll figure it out as we go, I guess. So we didn't have a main event match here tonight, but we did have a main event segment where we saw Toxic Attraction, let's not even say Toxic Attraction. We saw Gigi Dolin, JC Jane, and NXT champion Roxanne Perez in an NXT championship summit with Booker T presiding over it, basically like a contract signing without the contract actually physically there for them to sign anyway. Now, earlier in the night, we had heard from both members of Toxic Attraction, both Dolin and Jane, separately being interviewed for Mackenzie Mitchell, where it seemed like there had been something that had transpired over the past week since the last episode of NXT. Granted, the last episode of NXT, JC Jane accidentally did kick Gigi Dolin in the face, but it looked like it was an accident. And they were still kind of, you know, like a cohesive unit. And then tonight we come in and we hear from both of them that, they've been carrying each other, each other's backs for years and, you know, I'm better than her and blah, blah, blah. It seemed like, I guess just kind of high school girls fighting, I guess, is really the best way I could describe it. But in a way, I think they did a pretty good job. It made me believe that there was something like some sort of dissension in the ranks between them and we were going to actually see like a legitimate triple threat. Then we come back to this main event segment here tonight where they continued that. We first heard from I forget who spoke first, but we heard from both JC Jane that spoke first. And we heard from her. She gave a pretty decent promo on Gigi Dolin, kind of going back and forth, and then eventually goes back and forth to Gigi Dolin. I thought they did a pretty good job here. The acting was much better than I've seen out of both of them in a little while anyway. It wasn't like great by any stretch of imagination. You're not going to like see him win an Emmy or anything, but compared to what they have done in the past, I think it was a positive anyway. It ended up turning out that, they were just trying to swerve us the whole time. And they ended up attacking Roxanne Perez at the end of the segment, putting her through a table and holding the NXT Women's Championship high overhead. As we ended the show, next week going into Vengeance Day. So we'll see what actually it's not. Is it next week? I'm questioning myself now. I don't think it's next week.
Is it Saturday, correct?
Next Saturday. I think it is. I don't know. We'll have to look it up, but I think so. In the COVID era, my time has just like warped my sense of time. I don't know what day it is anymore.
I feel you on that one.
Yeah. Yep. So, but anyway, I thought this was a pretty decent segment. To kind of advance the story here, I saw the shades of Toxic Attraction, like lying about, falling apart. I saw shades of that throughout the night. And I thought maybe they were going to eventually pull the swerve at Vengeance Day. Where we find out that they were still in cahoots the whole time, they're still a team and whatever. But I'm wondering, now if where they're still showing that they're like a cohesive team, if we're still going to see something at Vengeance Day where, there's some miscommunication between Toxic Attraction and they end up costing each other the match and Roxanne Perez comes up victorious. It's kind of what I'm thinking. But Tom, your thoughts on everything that transpired in the main event segment?
Yeah, February 4th, so we are correct. And I don't currently have a race booked to film on that Saturday, so maybe I'll actually be watching one of these things live, which is a rarity anymore. But The way this went, I agree with you about pretty much everything that you said, and good performances tonight from JC and Gigi. This makes so much more sense to me than what they were making it seem like. And of course they were making it seem that way just for the swerve in the end, which doesn't really make sense from a character standpoint, because why wouldn't they keep the ruse going until Vengeance Day and, you know, take Roxanne unawares there? But I think it does work in the sense of creating the illusion of a threat against the new champion, and putting it out there like, oh, we're going to make sure that you're the shortest reigning NXT women's champion of all time. And racking my brain real quick, I'm pretty sure that math checks out, if the title were to change hands there. But
I think so.
I think the other one would be Kyrie after in between the Shayna reigns, but that's just off the top of my head. Lots of long reigns in this title history, but yeah, I mean, after we saw what we saw with Paul Heyman and Sami Zayn on Monday night, this was another like, wait, why are they at each other's throats all of a sudden? And if they're going to be splitting, why isn't one of them a babyface? This is so weird. So it just made so much more sense to me, not only in that respect when they revealed that it was a ruse and they attacked Roxanne, but in the sense that I like these wrestlers. I particularly like JC, and I have for a while, but let's not fool ourselves. They are not championship material. This is very reminiscent of when Billy Kay and how quickly we forget, but you know, those, the Iconics whom I liked very much, Peyton Royce.
Yeah. It was like on the tip of my tongue too.
Yeah. This is, I mean, you know, Roxanne is not the threat that Asuka was, but this is very reminiscent of that, where it's like, oh, okay, you know, they're really not championship material, but all right, we'll do this for now. And ultimately, it's just another thing to make Asuka look more dominant. I think that in her first major defense, Roxanne should stack them, just like Roman Reigns did at WrestleMania a couple years ago. You know, you're not losing anything in making her look strong against these two heels. So that's where we are back to at the end of tonight's swerve angle. We are back to where I feel this match should be.
All right. So let's see. We don't have anybody in the caller queue right now. So let's actually go over and we'll do emails early tonight. It would probably help if I already had the inbox up, but I think I closed it. So I'm filling time while I open it back up, and we get to Kevin Catani's email. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. My inspiration for tonight's question comes from last night's episode of Raw. In light of the returning legends, I have a two-part question. A, who are 4 to 5 former NXT performers that you'd love to see in backstage segments or backstage or other segments that might qualify as NXT legends? And B, who are 2 legends, singles or tag teams, you'd like to see come back and have a program on NXT TV? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to eight years back, and bonus point, office hours are now over. Hey, we got the bonus point plug in from Kevin, and he didn't know you're going to be on the show.
Every week that I hear that from him, I appreciate it.
So 4 to 5 NXT performers. I wish I read this before and I had some time to think about it.
Right.
Tommaso Ciampa is on the list. Kevin Owens is on the list for me. Let's see. And then throwing out a couple women like Becky Bailey, maybe. And then like a tag team. Well, we got the New Day, which is nice, but they're not necessarily NXT legends. If Jason Jordan was able to perform, I'd love to see American Alpha like come back for one small run.
Or just, you know, since Catani said also perhaps backstage segments, a nice little, you know, rally towel moment in the back,
yeah.
like the APA get all the time nowadays.
That would actually be really cool to see. That'd be cool to see. Anybody else come to mind?
Oh, and of course it would be with Chase U, because you've got Alpha Academy and Chase U.
Oh,
so that's
what
that would be.
Well,
you know what? Without much time to consider it, and maybe I'll keep the question in the back of my mind if something else pops to mind throughout the show. But tonight, I was, you know, they keep on throwing all these different tag teams out there, and Viking Raiders came to mind because they've been through a number of reinventions. I'm not even, you know, historically, and it's documented on this show when they were going on their undefeated run in NXT as the champions that relinquished, I have not been a big fan of the Viking Raiders. They seem like perfectly fine gentlemen, but I'm not huge on what they do on screen. But they do feel like the kind of team that, despite their various reinventions and attempts at success on the main roster, would be ripe at some point within the calendar year to return and do a program where they ultimately put over whoever's champion at the time, perhaps induced share. I mean, oh my goodness, yeah. I think I just sold myself on that. I'd like to see that.
I think I would too. I definitely think I would.
Yeah. Jinder Mahal and Valhalla, Valhalla,
I think is how they're pronouncing it.
And, you know, Johnny Gargano, it hasn't been too long, and he's another obvious one, like you mentioned Ciampa, and it's such an obvious pick, but he hasn't done that yet. Like, a lot of the latter portion of Ciampa's run felt like a guy who was already out that was just sticking around to help out the younger wrestlers. And Gargano, we haven't gotten that yet. So a return there would be good. He's got some unfinished business with Grayson Waller, who will be champion very soon, I hope. And gosh, I mean, at this point, most of the roster are NXT graduates. Let me see if I can pick someone from the women's roster here.
Asuka.
Well, you know what? That's a really good choice, actually, because they're not doing much with her right now.
Right.
Ooh, yeah. I think I really like that. And there's a story there where, sure, we've seen what we've seen over the years on the main roster, but she's still undefeated in NXT. Or is she? She came back with Kairi to do a tag match or two. Did they win those? Well, she's undefeated in singles competition anyway. So they could renew that storyline and, like, finally somebody will, Zoe Stark or Tiffany Stratton, or somebody will beat her on the black and gold brand, and that's where your story is. I like that. Good pick.
I like that. I like that a lot. Kevin, as always, man, thanks for the question. All right, let's go to JB's email. It's titled Awful Announcing Mystery Tag Team and NXT at the Rumble. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. I'm not sure that I've ever disliked an announcing duo worse than I like Vic Joseph and Booker T at the booth. They actively make me want to change the channel at times, and I don't know if I've ever been able to say that for both guys on the announcing team. At one point during Indy Hartwell versus Tiffany Stratton, Vic mentions that Booker would be upset if someone claimed their own locker room when he was wrestling. Booker responds with, well, it depends who, and then goes on to mention names like The Rock, Cena, and Hogan. So are we to surmise that Booker is comparing the star power of Stratton to the likes of Rock, Cena, and Hogan? It's as if he quite literally doesn't think about what he says at times, just let random streams of consciousness flow. Also, do you guys think there's any chance that the mystery tag team for Vengeance Day to be announced next week could be a team from the main roster or a newly debuting team? Finally, the annual mandatory question, what, if any, involvement do you think NXT might have in the men and women's Rumble matches? Predict potential most eliminations of the night, spot of the night, and MVP of the night at the Rumble from an NXT perspective. As always, love the show and go VIP. Okay, so there's a lot in there to kind of digest. First off, with Booker T and Vic Joseph, Vic, I don't necessarily mind. I guess I've just said that because we've gotten Michael Cole for so long. You know, Vic Joseph is that Michael Cole style announcer that, you know, WWE seems to love. So I don't necessarily mind him. Booker, there's a couple things with Book. A, at least for me, and this could be because I do have a little bit of hearing loss, Booker T, his voice, just his tone of voice in on commentary. It's hard for me to hear sometimes, like over the crowd noise and stuff. So I could hear Vic just fine, but I sometimes struggle to understand what Booker's saying. And I don't know if that's just me or if that's everybody else. You know, sometimes I do have trouble hearing like lower frequencies, but so that there's that. But yeah, Booker, like tonight in the main event segment with Toxic Attraction, Roxanne Perez, when, you know, the girls are all fighting and he just yells a shucky ducky quack quack. I'm like, look, man, like I know it's probably scripted that way, right? But a lot of the things that Book says, just I don't necessarily. Yeah, it kind of just does sound like he's flying off the cuff a lot of the times. He's not my favorite on commentary by a long shot. But like I said, I'm okay with Vic. If Vic went away tomorrow and somebody else took his place, you know, that was like an equal or better, you know, like they brought back Nigel McGuinness or something like that, I'd be 100% for it. But yeah, I think he's fine in the role as is anyway. As far as like him trying to compare, you know, Tiffany Stratton to the likes of Roxanne and Hogan, it's a stretch, but I can kind of see why he said that though. And I think it's really from his perspective, trying to get the talent over. That is his job. I mean, the color guy, he's trying to get the talent over. So I can see why he said it, but it definitely is a stretch. It definitely is a stretch to try and compare somebody like her to them. I think that's where they want to see her go, but it's not, she's certainly not there yet. I could see him using that line for somebody maybe like Bron Breakker or, you know, I was not necessarily Roxanne Perez, but maybe like Mandy Rose when she was still around and had the title. You know, to kind of, because I feel like it kind of fits there more, but I can kind of see where he was going with that line. As far as the mystery tag team, do you remember a mystery tag team? I remember a graphic showing a mystery team, but I think that was supposed to be, the winners of the New Day Invitational.
I believe he must have sent the email before the show ended, because towards the end, we did find out that it's going to be Chase U.
Okay. All right.
Which, I guess to cover anything I might have. Well, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I did, and you may have as well, suspect that when Duke sauntered off earlier, it was like, oh no, they're setting us up to think he's dejected or whatever. But he's actually leaving for a good reason, and we'll find out what that is probably next week. And of course, since NXT moves at such a rapid pace, we found out tonight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the thought didn't even cross my mind. I was like, I thought maybe this was finally going to be Duke Hudson, like his exit from Chase U, and we'll finally see the match or a feud, you know, between Chase and Hudson. But I actually really like the way that they went with it. Basically, you know, later in the night, we find out that it just like Tom said, he went to Shawn Michaels and essentially requested the match. Shawn Michaels told him to talk to New Day. New Day went for it, and Hudson dragged it out quite a bit when he was telling Andre
quite
Chase,
a bit.
Which I thought was pretty funny, and I think he delivered it really well. Cool.
Of course, there's more to the email, but just to touch on these things, I agree with everything you said about the comments on Tiffany Stratton. And I'll just pile on by saying that, like, pretty much all wrestling commentary is hyperbole. So I thought it worked fine and said a lot about how they're trying to position Stratton within the NXT world. I am very forgiving of Book because I just think he's so entertaining. That doesn't mean that he doesn't occasionally say things that it's like, maybe you shouldn't have said that. Like tonight when he said... He said behinds. It's behinds and seats. That's what this business is about. And it's like, well, maybe you should say that the business is about wins and championships, and everybody just understands that it's about filling the seats, because, I mean, that's what every sporting event is about,
right?
If you want to look at it that way, Book. So maybe don't put it that way. But I am frequently so much more annoyed by Vic Joseph. And tonight, what really annoyed me was when he called, I believe it was Electra Lopez who did it, a urine Augie. And that's an acceptable way to pronounce it, but it's an uranagi, and when you pause, when he says swinging urine, agi. I don't know, Vic.
That's actually kind of, I didn't catch that. I definitely didn't catch that. All right. So we've got the last part of the email here. Do we think that NXT is going to have any involvement in the men's or women's Royal Rumble matches? And then, you know, most eliminations of the night, spot of the night, MVP of the night from an NXT perspective. I don't know. So like last year, they were adamant about not having NXT as part of the Rumble. It was after the switch to NXT 2.0, it was developmental again. So I understood that. Now, I mean, they've dropped the 2.0, but I mean, it's still very much the developmental show. I could see them having a little bit of involvement, but I don't think it's going to be a whole heck of a lot. If anything, I could see, especially if Bron Breakker loses the title at Vengeance Day, I could see Bron Breakker maybe debuting at the Rumble. Maybe somebody like Carmelo Hayes or even Grayson Waller. If for some reason Grayson Waller doesn't win the NXT title, or even if he does, maybe he enters and he has a title around his waist, gets some eyeballs on the product. But I don't think that's super likely. I think if anything, it's going to be maybe one or two people, maybe one man, one woman. But I don't think it's going to be a lot of that. From something I read earlier in the day, and I wish I could remember the source so I could cite it from, but they're talking a lot, like fewer surprise returns in the Rumble and more kind of like out of the box surprises, I guess, the thinking outside the box surprises, but they're not quite sure what that means. So take that as you will, because I'm not really sure what that means myself. But there's a possibility that maybe like last minute they kind of dip into the NXT well and bring out some of that talent. But I think for the most part it's going to be main roster in the Rumble. As far as like the rest of the stuff, you know, most eliminations tonight, spot of the night, that's super hard to predict. I would like to see, I'd like to see Kofi in the Rumble and have him redeem his Rumble spot from last year. So maybe there's some NXT involvement there. We have the NXT champions in the Rumble. That would be cool to see, But other than that, I'm not sure about like who we might see for like most eliminations or anything like that. Tom, any thoughts?
Yeah, last year set a very low bar as probably the worst Royal Rumble ever. I think it was Kelly whom I first heard say that. And of course, I was like, well, that's quite a statement. It couldn't possibly have been the worst. And then I thought about it for a while and I was like, oh. You know what?
It might have been.
Right. It was really, really bad. But it also made this kind of thing harder to predict for all the reasons that you said, that they did not rely on NXT. And if I remember correctly, they didn't even, for the Women's Rumble, which normally has a shallower pool, so they have to pull from NXT. I think, if I remember correctly, I was surprised that they didn't have anyone, or at least if they did have anyone, it was a very small like maybe Katana Chance did something again. And I like 3 years ago or something, I was proud of myself for predicting that she was going to be in the Rumble and she was, but that was 3 years ago. So I will be very surprised in particular if there are any men from NXT barring the New Day and even then perhaps in the Rumble. If there are any, I'm going to go the boring route and say that it's Bron Breakker and that it's Wes Lee. And that would be cool to see, particularly in Wes's case, but Waller did come to mind, of course, you know, talking about all the top names, and they've done things like that before, but they've year to year to year, they've had very different strategies as to whom to pull from NXT. But I'll be surprised if we see them at all, because there are just so many men on the main roster who are going to fill those spots. And potential spot of the night, Braun Spears somebody, I guess. I wouldn't even predict that if he was there that they would give him a significant number of eliminations. So then for the women, I would say Katana Chance has been out there at least twice that I remember. Now she's a tag champion. It would be somewhat awkward to put her out there without Kaden also getting a spot. So either let's do that or let's go ahead and give the stunt spot to Sol Ruka, who's already done it in a battle royal on NXT TV, but, you know, majority of the audience has not seen that. And you can trust her. I mean, she walks on her hands as naturally as she walks on her feet. So you can trust her to do something. And again, no eliminations. She'll just be out there to do the stunt spot and she'll get thrown out shortly thereafter. And I wouldn't even put money on that. Just with the question in the email inbox, that's the best that's coming to mind. Although one that does excite me is Mako Satomura. And I'm not even sure that it would be call up. It's just like, where's she been? What's she been doing? What's her status? Are we ever going to see her again? Let's get her in a rumble. That excites me. But yeah, again, I wouldn't even predict a significant number of eliminations. It's more about the entrance and getting that moment.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. All right, cool. So JB, again, thank you as always for the email. Let's actually go over to the phone lines because we do have somebody that that raised their hand and wants to be part of the show. We're going to go over to area code 914. Go ahead, 914, state your name, where you're calling from, and what do you got for us?
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Tom. This is Brad in Florida. How are you?
This is Nate, but Tom is here, but we're doing good. We're doing good.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Nate. I'm so sorry. Nate and Tom,
not
my bad.
A problem, man.
I'm so
not
sorry.
A problem.
I thought Kelly was there, too. My bad. Regardless, it's funny that the email's last question was about the Rumble because it was on my mind, too. And I think they could have even advertised this a little bit, you know, last night on Raw or on SmackDown the previous Friday or whatever, but I think they missed an opportunity. I think they should have had to open the show and close the show maybe some sort of, you know, battle royal. I mean, we're going to be seeing a lot of battle royals coming up, but some sort of battle royal where, you know, the men's winner and the women's winner get a spot in the Royal Rumble. I think it would have been a really cool thing. I think it would have been very interesting to see, you know, who would have come out of that and you get, you know, one woman and one man from NXT in the Rumble and, you know, even just the talking about challenging Roman Reigns and when I win, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. Like, it would have been kind of interesting and a good way to tie things together. I think better than, I loved the Tiffany Stratton match to open the show tonight. And I thought it was really good. And I think she's incredible. But I think they would have been better served having that in the middle of the show and having started with a women's battle royal for that spot and then ended it with a men's battle royal in that spot. And you still have plenty of time to do that Roxanne, JC Jane, Gigi Dolan type of segment another week. I mean, what do you guys think of that? Like, don't you think that would have been kind of a cool idea to tie it all together?
Like, personally, yeah, I think that would be kind of cool to give, because especially where this is a developmental territory, you know, like, say you have a yearly, and I think they even did this one year, Tom, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say
2013.
Yeah, okay, I thought I remembered that, where they did have a battle royal for, you know, for somebody that, and I think at the time it was just for the men's battle royal. I don't think there was a women's battle royal then. Yeah, that was 2016. I think it was the first women's. So I'm totally for it. Where it's a developmental territory to get you up on the main roster, what better way than to debut at the Royal Rumble, you know? And you know, they can kind of go with the fact that this isn't like a full debut. This is just an opportunity. This is an opportunity for you to, you know, maybe win the big one or something like that. Yeah, they wouldn't necessarily, you know, they could pull the trigger on somebody and maybe have somebody in NXT, you know, win and boom, propel them right to the top of the card. But, you know, I think it would have to be the right person for that. And I don't see anybody on the main, in the NXT roster, at least at the moment, that I think could fit that mold. But I do like the idea. Fitting it in tonight, I don't, I think they probably could have done that. But if this was a very, this kind of was a bit of a busy show. I mean, there was a, we had a lot of Brooks and Jensen and what's her name? Henley and James there. So, I mean, they could have maybe cut back on a little bit of that. But at the same time, I do like some of the storytelling they're telling there. I think it might have been tough to fit in on this show, but I think if, you know, obviously they wanted to do it, they could have and kind of, you know, moved a couple things to next week if they needed to. You know, cause we still do have one more show before February 4th there. Tom, your thoughts on Royal or Battle Royals for NXT spots at the Royal Rumble?
Yeah, Brooks Jensen, you mentioned, he says biscuits on gravy. That's how Brooks Jensen eats that meal, is biscuits on the gravy.
Huh. I
think it's a fantastic, yeah, just a little bit. I think he also said that that they are going to be challenging for the NXT Woman Championship.
Yes,
I mean, hey, I like the guy. It plays into his character, but oh boy, that's an intriguing angle, and it's been really nice to see Kiana James really flourish. I need me some more Secretary G on TV. That's what I need. But Brad, I absolutely love the idea, what they did in 2013, and you know, you may be well aware of this, so I'm certainly not. Just for the benefit of anybody listening who isn't aware or doesn't or has a hazy memory of it, in 2013 they had an access tournament that Bo Dallas won, and that's when he got in the Rumble and ended up in a very mini feud with Wade Barrett. And that was most people's introduction, including mine, to Bo Dallas. I wasn't even watching NXT regularly yet at the point. And a whole tournament makes more sense for something like Access as opposed to doing it on TV for what's going to amount to probably just a few minutes on a premium event. But I don't think there's any shame in... We've debated this over the years, and I don't think there's any shame in just admitting without saying it in words that, and even was it Carmelo Hayes who said it tonight? Like, oh, you got the call before I did, or something like that. Like, admitting that NXT is a lower level than the main roster, not doing this whole third brand, you know, winning Survivor Series thing, as fun as that was, and having something like a battle royal that would only take up two segments on a television show, tonight's show wouldn't have been primed for that because it was very much a ladies' night in as far as the action and the segments that we saw, just predominantly. Even I think there were only two segments that were really built apart from little vignettes. Two off the top of my head segments that were built around men's action. One of them was the confrontation between Waller and Breaker, and another one was the Chase U and JD McDonough thing, the impetus of which was a Thea Hale celebration. So very much a ladies' night. But yeah, there's definitely different ways you can write that out, and we won't know what could have been better bumped until we see next week's storytelling. But it does feel like, as suggested earlier, they could have drawn out the Toxic Attraction thing a bit more. Even if they were going to do the reveal on TV, they could do that as the go-home angle. Like, tonight's contract signing very easily could have been the go-home angle. It actually was so much that I started to think, like, wait a second, is this another during-the-day thing that's going to happen before the Royal Rumble? I don't think it's this weekend, but it sure seems like it is based on that angle. But that's just a long way of saying I love the idea, and I think it would be an excellent way of introducing wider audiences to select people, you know, one per year, who's going to get that NXT spot. And I believe in 2014, well, I remember in 2014 it was Rusev, but I don't recall whether they did another Access tournament. I feel like Rusev just kind of showed up. And it was enough, though, that I remember starting to think, like, oh, cool, so who's going to get the NXT spot next year and next year? And then they just started changing strategies. And there was one year where it was the champions, like Adam Cole came out, and his ribs were still all taped up and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've changed it. Oh, and first women's Royal Rumble 2018. The only reason I remember that is because 2019 was the one that I remembered that the second one I absolutely loved. I thought it was an incredible Royal Rumble, and like I gushed about it online. And I specifically remember where I was when I was like typing up this whole review of why I loved that Royal Rumble so much. And so that's why I remember that it was 2019. So that means the first was 2018.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That makes sense. I think what I was thinking, 2016 is when the women's titles split, or the women's titles actually came out and they weren't the Divas title anymore. I think that's what I was thinking of, but yeah, 2018, that definitely sounds right. And then also kind of to backtrack for something we were talking about a little bit earlier, you were absolutely right on the ball with Kairi Sane as the second one there, the shortest reign. I looked that up. I meant to bring it up, and I forgot. So you were right on the ball there.
Cool.
Brad, any follow-up or something else for us?
Yeah, I mean, the Rumble can be like a real kingmaker. Like, if you're going to introduce a Carmelo Hayes to the main roster, like, what better way than to have him last to the final seven or the final six, or, you know, doing some of those moves off the rope that he does, you know, where he's, you know, hitting the ropes and jumping on top of people. Like, what better way to introduce him? There's no better way to introduce someone that you want to bring up than the Royal Rumble. So I honestly feel like they're kind of foolish if they don't go that route with at least one or two people that they want to do. Like, even if you did have Grayson and Bron Breakker in the Royal Rumble, and they do a stare down in the middle of the ring with a bunch of chaos behind them, and Michael Cole points out that these are the two that are going at it in Vengeance Day next week, and boy, is there a rivalry here, whatever, and one of them eliminates the other, whatever it is. I just feel like it's kind of foolish that they don't introduce them. And don't forget, I mean, I think you have – I'm sorry, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, that's before WrestleMania, right? That's not before the Royal Rumble, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, WrestleMania.
Okay. I thought – because I was thinking, well, that's a way to get the Madcap Mosses of the world and maybe the people that wouldn't be in the Rumble into a big event. But regardless, whatever. I forget, did one of you guys host with Wade after a SmackDown about 2 weeks ago or last week?
Wasn't me.
It wasn't. Kelly did a Raw recently. What did I do? I think it's been about a month since I've been on with Wade.
Okay. Well, Wade had asked, like, are there any women on the NXT roster that you see as being potentially impactful?
Oh, yes, that was... That was a Kelly question, and I remember that because he did not say Zoe Stark, and he should have said Zoe Stark. I actually don't know what his current take on her is, but I was waiting for him to say that name, and he did not.
He's still Zoe Stark.
Yeah, I love Zoe Stark. I think she's main roster ready. But, like, when I look at JC Jane, she is so damn charismatic. It's unbelievable. I mean, maybe I'm missing something with her in-ring skill or something, but I think she's fine when I see her in the ring. And I think a lot of it is just making people care about you or making people mad at you. And she's so charismatic, you know, like I actually think even Kiana James is going to be a big main roster star. And the reason I started thinking of this stuff is, watching Stevie Turner, you know, I in these segments, and, you know, she's doing, like, the Twitch streamer girl angle, which is fine, and it's cute and all. She just has that look. Like, she almost looks like she's, like, the sister of, if you took Liv Morgan and Alexa Bliss and kind of made a baby out of them, like, it would be her. And it's funny, like, I think her finisher is actually Liv Morgan. I think it's actually Oblivion, which is, you know, obviously Liv Morgan's finisher. And I've seen clips of her and things of her wrestle, and she seems very good, but more importantly, she seems extremely comfortable talking and very charismatic. Like, I think she's actually going to be a big future star on the main roster as well. I mean, it might take a few years for her to get there, but I really think she has a lot of potential, and I think that there's more than, you know, Kelly had pointed out. Like, I think it's very bright the future with the NXT women, especially Tiffany Stratton. I mean, Tiffany Stratton to me looks like a future WWE champion. Like, her mannerisms, her selling, her moveset, her attitude, like everything she does, it almost screams like, you know, this is going to be the next big person on the main roster for the women because she's that good. And I wanted your guys' thoughts on just like the talent on the women's side, because I think it's a lot better than whatever, you know, and I really love listening to Kelly. It's no disrespect to him, but I was surprised, like, there's a lot of charisma out there. There's a lot of it, at least from what I see on the NXT women's side.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think right now the NXT women's roster is in the best shape that it's been in a while. You know, coming into NXT 2.0, it was, and even a little bit before the 2.0 switch, you know, the women's roster just wasn't what it used to be. I mean, you know, back in the days of, you know, we had Asuka, we had Bayley, and, you know, we had Kairi Sane, Shayna. I mean, the women's division, I mean, I remember talking, you know, back, you know, when Tom was on the show regularly, Tom Kelly and I, talking just about how important the and kind of like I guess sacred, for lack of a better term, right now the women's division is, how protected the women's title was, and I feel like that title's still relatively protected, but when we went into that 2.0 era, that kind of beginning there, it really just felt like the women, especially, they were not up to where, you know, a lot of the men were, you know, and just kind of is what it is. But right now, you know, like you said, we've got Sol Ruka, we've got Alba Fire, we've got, I mean, even Cora Jade, I feel like has come a long way, especially with her character. You know, Zoe Stark, I like your point about Kiana James. Kiana James really won me over with that, was it a battle royal where she was when the final four or something, like, I think it was something like that, two months ago.
About 2 months ago.
Yeah, she really won me over there. Like, before, I wasn't quite sure about her, and that match solidified her in my head there. I think she definitely has the talent and capability to be a big star. You know, Tiffany Stratton, like you said. So, I right now, I feel like NXT women's roster is in a really good spot. But, Tom, I feel like this is right up your alley.
Oh boy, let me see how long I go on this. I'll try not to be too pained. I'll try to do the Cliff's Notes. I'm so thrilled, Brad, that somebody else likes JC Jayne. I must confess that a lot of the reason I like her is because I think she's one of the hottest women on the planet, and I'm not the type of person who, I think my history on the Torch shows that I'm not the type of person that typically says that kind of thing, but because I'm not, I feel like I should point out that I do find myself biased in favor of JC because of her looks, but I would agree with you regarding the charisma and the in-ring talent. She's not a savant, but I do think that she has been, the stigma of her first couple of matches on NXT TV has followed her around, where she had a couple of unfortunate spots and people just have not, people decided then that she stinks and they weren't going to look past that. That's what I feel happened there. Also, she was tagging with Gigi, who seems to be much more popular with the audience. So that I don't think helped all that much. And then, you know, Kiana James, somebody who less than a year ago I thought was totally rotten and had no idea what she was doing in the ring. And then they strapped her with this awful gimmick. And now she strikes me as a finished product that could absolutely walk out on the main roster and look like she belongs. She's very good in the ring. She doesn't look anything like the woman who was jobbing to Nikita Lyons and not knowing how to even jump into a bump, let alone take one. And she's taken this rotten gimmick and made it not seem rotten, because, you know, it's like the are you going to be a Red Rooster or are you going to be an Undertaker? And I don't know, maybe like too dramatic of an example, but Undertaker could have been a rotten gimmick, but Mark Calloway made something of it. Whereas, I know the guy's name and it's just not coming to me. But you know, Red Rooster did not make something of that. And
I can't think of his name either. It's on the tip of my tongue.
I just can't. Yeah.
I'm just going to blurt it out in about 30 awful. Seconds too.
Thank you. Once our minds go to something else when we're not actively trying to think of it. But and, you know, I don't know what gold there was to mine there, but that's not what we're talking about. Stevie
Terry
Turner,
Taylor.
I saw only the tiniest.
Terry Taylor.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Yes. I somebody on Instagram with his name who looks vaguely like him likes my posts from time to time, and I still wonder, is that him? What? Why would he be liking my? So I don't know why I forgot that, but I'm not going to profess to be a Stevie Turner expert. I only saw maybe three of her NXT UK matches, but they were good, and I do like this streamer thing that she's doing. It feels, you guys said it last week, I believe, it feels like one of the most modern things that, like, in wrestling right now, and I like that they're positioning it as a heel, because it's, I mean, it feels naturally heelish, but they're going out of their way for it. And yes, briefly on Tiffany, when I was regularly on the show, I liked to say that I think that her ceiling is WrestleMania main eventer, and I still think that, and I love that. The clicking cameras is a bit annoying, but I like that they've given her a big star entrance. But yeah, the roster is, I think, looking good. You know, what more needs to be said about All the Fire than already gets said all the time? I really like Ariana Grace out in injury right now. I like Blair Davenport. I don't know what she's doing. She just, on Instagram, she's just sort of posting that she's hanging out with her boyfriend. I don't know what her status is. Danny Palmer's working on it. There's potential there. Fallon Henley is a ceiling as a carpenter. I really like Indy Hartwell. Don't really know what's going on with Isla Dawn, but that's a different story. Ivy Nile is just a beast. Oh my goodness, I love Ivy. Talked about awesome. JC. Jakara Jackson is somebody who walks out on Level Up, and you look at her like, oh my God, that's a star. And I haven't really seen anything from her extensively, but I also, in the little bit that I've seen, I haven't seen anything that seemed like a red flag. Looks good. Of course, I like the KCs, the tag champs, Kiana James. There's potential in Lash Legend. Of course, Lyra Valkyria. I don't know why they're pronouncing it Lyra. There's probably something about that culture that I am not familiar with, but it looks like it should be Lyra. Mako's a different story, I believe. Lots of potential in Roxanne Perez. Sol Ruka, oh my goodness. Like, that's somebody I've been talking about on Bonus Point as a surefire star, and it does not surprise me that she is rising very quickly. I like Tatum Paxley quite a bit, probably a similar ceiling to a Fallon Henley, perhaps a bit higher. I really like Valentina Feroz. I don't know how that's going. Oh, I realize I skipped down in the bit, the list a little bit. Thea Hale is awesome, and it's like, I can't believe she's what, she's 19 now, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It's just crazy how much she just gets it. I really, really like Valentina Feroz a lot. I don't know what her future is in it. It feels like she's the perpetual sidekick, and I even feel what they're doing with her right now with Electra Lopez is probably not the end game of what they are building with Elektra. I think that Lola Vice is eventually going to be involved as the long game there. I love Yulisa Leon. I don't know what's going to go on after she rehabs, because she's out on injury as well. I just think Yulisa is phenomenal. Zoe Stark, we talked about her a very tiny bit. G, the secretary. Secretary G, I think that she's got some potential. I've only seen one practice match of hers, and I know that she's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but, I mean, I think there's a lot of potential there. And as far as people who have not made it to television yet, oh, well, I don't know why they have Brooklyn Barlow's out on injury. Wikipedia has her on the wrong list, but she seems perfectly fine so far, still learning, rehabbing currently, but I'm really excited for her to come back. And Lola Vice, I mean, all good signs so far. I think that Lola Vice could be a big star for WWE.
All right, well, there we go. A huge breakdown of the women's division in NXT and Level Up, which is still NXT, but you know what I mean. Cool, Brett, any follow-up there or anything else for us?
Yeah, I could have listened to that for another 10 minutes. Like, I loved that. Like, the way you just broke that down, it was unbelievable. And I didn't even mention Cora Jade and Roxanne, and that's how good it is. You know what I mean? It's honestly, I think the women's division in WWE in the main roster in 5 years is going to be off the hook better than it is now. You know, you know, you remove the, you know, the Natalias and the people who are going to be out. I think that a lot of these people have a lot more personality than, no offense to, like, the Shayna Baszlers of the world and the Natalias of the world and, you know, the Xia Lis and those people. Like, I'd like to see a lot of these women get called up sooner rather than later. I hope it happens. I don't even think we mentioned Indy Hartwell, who's good, very good, too. And it was funny. You brought up Yulissa and Valentina. I see them as, like, a female Los Lotharios, potentially. Like, maybe not just having a huge impact, but still being serviceable and, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But really quick, guys. I watched last week. I never understood, if you could tell me very quickly, why did Alba Fyre get a two-on-one match? I never even saw anything other than the promo that it's happening. Why did that even happen? Like, was there a segment that she just said, I want the tag? It was weird.
So there was a segment last week. So for a few weeks, there was you would see Casey Catanzaro, well, Katana Chance. I still to this day want to call her Casey Catanzaro. Katana
yeah.
Chance and Caden Carter, you know, kind of try to, like, talk Alba Fyre down and talk some, quotes, like, sense into her or something, you know, for lack of a better term. And we saw that last week after her match. And Alba Fyre essentially took some she kind of didn't like what they were saying, took a little offense to what they were saying, and challenged them to a match. And she's like, I don't even need a partner. And for some reason, they allowed it to happen.
It was
of course,
just
we got
weird.
Soul Ruka. But yeah.
Yeah, you got Soul Ruka coming out. But it was just weird. I don't know. Just seeing one person and the ref's holding up two belts and you're looking at one person. Like, what are you going to do? Be like the Usos just carrying around two belts? You know, it's just, I don't know. But,
yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Yeah. No. I just found that a little strange. But last question is, what the hell happened to Cameron Grimes? Is he, like, injured or dead or something? Like, even when they had the brawl with Grayson Waller and, you know, Bron Breakker, which everyone was holding them back, and which I didn't really understand what the purpose of that is, because those type of things happen every show and no one needs to hold anyone back. But, okay, whatever, I could suspend reality. But Cameron Grimes wasn't even there. Like, at least I didn't see him as one of the people holding everyone back. Like, is he gone? Like, is he? I don't think he was fired, but, like, I haven't seen him on TV in months. I feel like it's been months, right?
I am so ashamed of myself right now that I haven't wondered where the hell Cameron Grimes has been. It wasn't until you said the name Cameron Grimes, I'm like, where the hell has Cameron Grimes been? So he's still signed. He's still signed to the company. But yeah, that's a damn good point. I don't have an answer to that, to be honest. I'm wondering if maybe they were keeping him off TV, potentially a Rumble debut or something like that. That's just me spitballing. You know, we were kind of talking about that earlier on in the show. But I mean, it's been years now that we've been talking about Cameron Grimes going up to the main roster, and maybe this is it. You know, he wasn't really doing a whole heck of a lot of note in NXT lately. I mean, the biggest thing I think was, you know, the $1 million championship with, you know, Ted DiBiase and LA Knight. I mean, that was the last, like, real big thing that he did, and everything else I think is kind of, I don't want to say fell flat, but it didn't quite feel quite as big from there. I don't know what else he can really do in NXT other than win the NXT title. And I don't feel like that character, at least right now, is poised to do that. I think it would be smart to pull him up to the main roster. Tom, you have any idea on Cameron Grimes?
Yeah, it's with so many people on this roster right now, it's easy to say, like, oh, they could just be called up. They're ready. But there are so many of them that you can't do that, because then nobody would have spots. There would be too many people and nowhere to slot them all. But Grimes does feel like he's toward, if not at the top of that list, even above someone like Carmelo Hayes, who's still embroiled in this essentially a number one contender feud with Apollo Crews, because he's been off TV. And that's not, you know, we had the management shakeup, and I know there are other shakeups that have been ongoing, but at least relevant to what we're talking about, There's been a management shakeup since the last time we were talking about this 1 year ago when we were saying, oh, Cameron Grimes is definitely going to be called up in the Royal Rumble. And previously, call-ups tended not to make much sense a lot of the time. You know, there were more dubious ones than great ones, and a lot of that was just pulling them up when they were available rather than pulling them up when the time was right for them on the main roster. And if Cameron Grimes does get the call-up, I would view that as a sign that they decided he was done in NXT. They wanted him to call him up, but just because of that, they didn't say, oh, okay, he'll be on Raw next week. They decided to wait until the right time, which indeed may be the Royal Rumble. Maybe it's not. But if that's the case, great. I don't believe he's injured, but I also don't believe we've seen him since his Joe Gacy feud. And briefly, I forgot to mention when we were talking about potential Royal Rumble entrants that Indy Hartwell is on my short list as well, since Brad mentioned her. I do think that she is, all the things about call-ups considered that I mentioned, I do think that she is toward the list of consideration there to join the main roster and perhaps have a fun moment with Dexter Lumis at the Rumble.
Index. I'd love to see that reunion. All right, Brad, anything, any follow-up on that, or shall we move on?
I mean, you guys can move on, but you guys are really great. You guys are great guys. You guys do a great show, and I appreciate you being so generous with your time and allowing me to get all these questions in, because the one other really short thing I want to say is, like, LA Knight, like,
sure,
you know, just watching him in NXT and seeing him with The Undertaker this week, I mean, I almost, like, I have a lot of friends that watch the main roster, but they don't pay attention at all to NXT, as we all know those type of people. And I almost feel like, you know, with LA Knight, like, I heard, like, a really good song before it got popular. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like, you know, you saw,
yeah,
like, I just knew this guy was going to be amazing. And it's so incredible to see him in this huge feud with Bray Wyatt as his first thing. And it's so high profile. And then see him with The Undertaker and really holding his own, and quite honestly being the most dynamic person out of the three of them in that segment. I mean, it could be argued, you could say, wow, The Undertaker's got the, you know, the it factor and whatever, but to me, LA Knight stood out the most in that segment. And all Undertaker did was do some scary looks and a choke, I mean, and ride a motorcycle, but LA Knight was unbelievable there. And it's just so good to see that, and I'm so happy he got that chance. And I think there's so many people like that on the NXT roster that are going to make a huge impact, and I'm really excited to see it. And thanks for being so generous with your time, guys.
Hey, Brad, no problem, man. We appreciate the questions as always. That segment last night it's actually one of the few segments I've seen on Raw. I haven't actually watched Raw yet. It's probably going to be a tomorrow thing for me. But of course, you know, I saw a replay on Reddit or YouTube or something. I don't know. Saw it somewhere. But I loved the segment personally. I was a huge fan of the American Badass Undertaker as a kid. Like, you know, a very polarizing character, but like, I loved it. I was at the right age when he came back, like this rebellious, I remember actually watching his return at Judgment Day. It was one of the few pay-per-views my parents actually let me buy. And, I remember him coming out, wasn't expecting the return. I had no idea about dirt sheets and stuff back then. And, you know, was just like over the moon about it. He was, I mean, one of my favorite characters, like, going forward. Really nostalgic pop for me last night to actually hear, like, him come out to American Badass, my personal feelings about Kid Rock aside. Really cool to hear that and kind of just see that whole character. I thought it was also kind of funny that he had some trouble with the bike coming out and then getting it to spin up at the end of the segment. And I think, and I actually watched this a couple times, you can actually see there's a fan who's like right there dressed up almost like a biker, like he had some biker tire on, and he starts pointing at the bike. And I think the fan actually helped Undertaker get the bike going. That's just me. I have no idea if that's legit or not, but that's just what I saw. And it kind of seemed funny to me. But overall, I love the segment. LA Knight, I can't agree with you more, Brad. Like, he's one of the most charismatic people, I think, on the entire WWE roster, NXT and main roster included. You know, seeing him in NXT, like, and I didn't know him as Eli Drake. I mean, I didn't see any of his stuff until he got to NXT. And I mean, I remember when he debuted, like, I started calling him the Rock Light, because I haven't seen anybody come into the ring and grab a mic and cut a promo in that style since The Rock. Like, a lot of similar shades there. And he's even admitted that he draws a lot of inspiration from The Rock's promos and things. But really cool to see that. And like you said, I'm really interested to see, like, you know, 5 years from now, where the current NXT roster, where they slot in on the main roster, and where things are going to go. Things keep going the way they're going. Tom, any thoughts on that before we kind of hit the rest of the show?
Well, now you know what I think it is. I think they were in Philadelphia. Yeah, they were, right? Philadelphia? Yes. There were a bunch of Eagles references. They were in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking probably not Taker's bike. They probably got a different bike, and I didn't see the biker guy. But now I'm thinking that guy got a front row seat because he loaned his bike. And he's just like, oh, yeah, sometimes it does that. And Taker's like, God damn it, I should have just ridden up from Austin. So that's my guess. But, yeah, very similar positions, you and I, with Biker Taker. The time that I came into wrestling was during his extended time away there. And so when he returned as the American Badass, that was really my first exposure to him, even though I was aware of what he had been before. And of course I've now gone back and seen all of that. Years and years ago at this point, but it was definitely one of those things where, like, I had my favorites, my parents knew who my favorites were. So, like, they knew what birthday gifts to get me or whatever. And I remember after he came out and Kid Rock played, and at the time I actually liked Kid Rock, being whatever teenage age I was at the time.
Yeah, me too.
I remember telling my parents, like, hey, so Undertaker t-shirts now. That's what I want you guys. And I make it sound like I was so spoiled, but that's just one of my distinct memories. I guess Judgment Day, that's toward the end of the year, right? So that must have been Christmas time-ish. So I was making my Christmas list, and I was like, all right, I want a Dead Man Ink shirt. That's just a connected memory.
That black and red Dead Man Ink shirt, man. I never exactly. Got it, but I would have loved it. I used a.
Yep.
There was an official WWF, I think, at the time, .com wallpaper that had the Dead Man Ink, that logo on it.
Of course.
And so that was like my wallpaper on my computer back in the day. Oh, yeah. I was all about the Dead Man. Matter of fact, when I saw that clip last night, I sent it to a buddy of mine who's not a wrestling fan. I mean, if like I drag him to a show or something, whatever, but he doesn't really keep up with it. But I had to send that to him for the nostalgia, and he was like, "Oh my god!" He was super excited to see American Badass.
Yeah, that's cool, and that they saved it until after he retired the actual Dead Man. It really made a lot of sense, and I actually was not super high overall on Raw last night for reasons that we don't need to get into on the NXT program. But I was surprised that, which was easily my favorite segment that I liked quite a bit, also received ire. I mean, of course, everything is these days because you see everybody's opinion everywhere all the time now. But I was surprised that people were disappointed to not see Dead Man Taker.
I was too, actually.
I was like, no, it makes so much sense. But that's just me. But of course, we are talking about LA Knight, aren't we? And yeah, again, we line up very closely with Brad's take. I had even resigned to myself just feeling like, okay, LA Knight's going to top out as a jobber to the stars on the main roster. And I suppose, you know, that is still a possibility, but boy, is he just, he is making sure that he is noticed. And he is people are talking more about, at least as far as I've seen, people are talking more about LA Knight than they're talking about Bray in that segment where the big moment was Undertaker whispering in Bray's ear. But like my favorite thing was after LA Knight had been running down Taker, basically challenging him while simultaneously backing out of the arena in the typical LA Knight fashion. Then Bray comes out, and so Knight goes back to the ring, and you can just hear him say to Taker, and he said something way funnier than this, but it was something to the effect of, forget everything I just said, I'm coming back in. You know, something like that. It was just so funny. The dude's great.
No, LA Knight just gets it. I mean, he just gets it. And his ability on the mic is, I think, probably, I want to say maybe the best on the roster. Like, at least in my opinion, anyway. I love listening to the guy speak. Love listening to him talk. Okay, so that's enough of the main roster. We still got a lot more of this show to talk about. So, all right, let's go through here and see what else we haven't talked about. We talked a little bit about Casey Catanzaro, Katana Chance, and Caden Carter versus Alba Fire and Sol Ruka. We talked a little bit about that with the callers, but so we did see that happen here tonight. We saw Casey and Casey, I'm going to just say it that way because it's easier. We saw the Casey gang, there we go, retain their NXT tag team titles. Excuse me. Wow, that was unexpected. Okay. We saw them retain their tag team titles against Alba Fire and Sol Ruka. As we talked about a little bit earlier, this was supposed to be a handicap match for the tag team titles, which I thought was some weird booking here. Like, we've seen instances in the past, like on the main roster anyway, where there's been like one tag champion and, you know, his partner or her partner goes down and they got to find another partner because you can't just have one person hold the tag titles. So, matter of fact, I think that's how Nicholas became a tag champion with Braun Strowman. I think he had to find a partner because he couldn't challenge for the titles on his own. But then they allow it to happen here tonight. I don't know. Like, it's obviously wrestling. The rules change all the time. And, you know, especially to fit the narrative. But I do like some consistency sometimes there, and this just seemed like a weird booking decision to me. It was kind of interesting to see, like, oh, hey, what's going to happen? Is Alba Fire going to win? But, you know, like Tom said earlier, like, what was the, you know, if she did win, what is she supposed to do? Like, parade around, like, the Usos, two titles? Like, it just seemed a little strange. I'm glad to see Casey and Casey win here. You know, they're the established team. So Ruka and Alba Fire were thrown together after the bell rang. So, you know, there's that. Makes sense for Sol Ruka, and, you know, considering the little bit of a feud and the story that was going on with Alba Fire and Sol Ruka. But I think this is obviously kind of to set something more up with Isla Dawn. You know, I talked a few weeks, maybe even a month ago at this point, about Isla Dawn and Alba Fire potentially being a tag team. I'm wondering if that's kind of where this goes tonight, where this goes after tonight, rather. You know, we saw Isla Dawn come out after Alba Fire and Sol Ruka lost, and just kind of stood on the entrance ramp as Alba Fire retreated to the back. I think it would be cool to see Alba Fire and Isla Dawn in a tag team, or at least unite together. You know, very similar characters, kind of dark and spooky, whatever. I feel like it would be kind of a cool tag team, and like if to see them together, especially if they want to, you know, promote that tag team, to actually see them dethrone, you know, the Casey gang, as I'm now calling them, would be a good way to do that. Not that I'm advocating for, you know, Katana Chance and Caden Carter to lose the tag titles, because I'm liking their reign for the most part when they do actually get some time on TV. But I also think, you know, very deserved tag team champions after everything that they've done over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years as a team in NXT, however long it's been. I think it's been about that, 3 or 4 years. I think they started they actually got together about the time I joined the show. So, yeah, it sounds all right, but 3 or 4 years ago. Any thoughts there on what was supposed to be a handicap match turned actual tag team match?
Yeah, of course, I have a history of a public history of quite enjoying the Sunshine Gang there, but I do like your idea of Dawn and Fire becoming a tag team and being the ones to dethrone them. I think that would be an interesting direction to take, and it does seem like, just based on the dynamic between them tonight, it does seem like the leaning would be a heel team. So it would be a turn for Fire, with Dawn being the devil whispering in her ear. And it was really, really weird. And there was such an easy fix. I mean, it definitely seemed, I thought it was going to be Valkyria, actually, but it did seem like this was set up for somebody to walk out and join Fire. So, I mean, you know, nothing against Valkyria. She's perfectly fine. But I'm, as mentioned, I'm so high on Ruka that I was happy to see her get the spot. And I thought she looked fantastic in the match, as is her wont. But, I just think it's such an easy fix. All you had to do was have Fire being fired up, and Shawn Michaels can say something like, it's great that you want to get your hands on him, but I can't put the titles on the line. You're not a tag team. And she can just say, I don't care. I just want to get my hands on him, or whatever. And there you go. Then it's just a handicap match that Fire wanted, and the titles don't have to be on the line. And I know saying that the titles are on the line is trying to get more people to tune in, is something different to put in the WWE.com headlines, but it was just bizarre.
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of them kind of throwing rules away to kind of just appease the current storyline, but you know, is what it is there. All right, what else do we got here tonight? Let's talk about the Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker segment. So over the weekend, I think it was over the weekend, just at some point between last NXT and tonight's NXT, there was a viral video that broke out. It seemed like there was some sort of a fight that broke out in at the Performance Center that involved Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker. At the time, like when I first saw it, I wasn't quite sure if it was legit or not. Like it almost seemed like it was a real fight the way that they filmed it. They filmed it from the angles of multiple other trainees, like cell phones, like you know, portrait style, like TikTok style or Instagram, whatever. I kind of liked the way that they did this because it made it feel like it was like a legit fight that broke out backstage. Come to find out, you know, as the show opened tonight, it wasn't legit. It was, you know, obviously it was a staged fight. Between Grayson Waller, Bron Breakker, ended up in the ring later on in the night. Grayson Waller calls out Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker comes out with the entire men's locker room behind him. They try to break up Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker, and they can't do that. So Bron Breakker and Grayson Waller, they're fighting on the outside of the ring, and Breakker looks like he's going for a spear. It was kind of a strange angle that they had. It looked like he was going for a spear, but like you could tell he just basically ran straight into the barricade. Grayson Waller kind of pushed him and kind of like shoved him along a little bit, but it was a little bit of a botched spot. That said, he ran headfirst into the barricade, and the barricade just like shattered, and he goes through it, and that's kind of the end of the segment. You know, Grayson Waller holds the title up high over his head, and they kind of end the segment there with, you know, medical working on Bron Breakker. Now, it probably wouldn't have been so bad if it wasn't blatantly obvious that they had swapped out one part of the barricade for a cardboard barricade that they just painted black. Now, obviously, you know, you gotta gimmick it and make it so, you know, that the talent's not going to get hurt or anything. But the way that they used this cardboard was just, I mean, you could tell it was cardboard. When cardboard shatters like that, and you know, something gets thrown through it, especially if it's painted, you see all of the brown cardboard underneath, you know, in the cracks and everything, and you could certainly see that tonight. Then they showed a perfect shot of like the medical staff working on Bron Breakker, and there was like one of the ladies, you know, one of in the medical staff, like just picks up a piece of cardboard like it's nothing and like tosses it aside, and it's like I don't know, it that took away so much from the segment for me, because I was okay on it. Like, I wasn't high on it. Like, it was kind of just there. Like, I it was a continuation of this viral video, like, whatever. You know, kind of there to obviously hype the Vengeance Day match between Breakker and Waller. But once we saw that cardboard barrier, I'm just like, come on. We're supposed to believe that this very obvious cardboard barrier here just rendered our champion, like, useless? Come on. I don't know. Is what it is. Like, give him credit for trying anyway. But this segment, like, it was, like I said, it was okay. But that ending really kind of took me out of the moment. Also, the fact that Grayson Waller ended this segment holding the title high overhead kind of gives him that visual win. This isn't the go-home show for Vengeance Day, but I'm curious to see what happens next week. Usually, whoever's holding the title high overhead at the go-home show loses at Vengeance Day. I'm curious to see if they do some other segment next week where Breaker might be getting that visual win, and which may foreshadow Grayson Waller finally dethroning, or somebody, at least somebody, finally dethroning Bron Breakker as a champion. Tom, your thoughts on that Bron Breakker and Grayson Waller segment?
Yeah, I've felt Waller as championship material for better part of a year now, longer than a year. So I'm really hoping that this is his time. He's felt like next up for quite a while, and he does genuinely feel like Breakker's biggest threat yet. Yeah, they're going through the barricade thing. It looked fakey. It's better than, like, stacking a desk chair on top of Brock and getting a 10 count out of it. That it's just one of those wrestling things. Like, you know, we're talking about the All the Fire match. She barely shoulder bumped the stairs and then was out for the rest of the match. And it's just like, you know, it's just one of those wrestling things. Sometimes from person to person, you're going to buy some things and not buy into others as well. With that SummerSlam finish that I referenced, it seems like they really should have had Brock go under the ring and lower the ring back, use the forklift to lower the ring back on top of him. And even though we know that there's space there and nothing actually is holding him down, we're not looking at it. So it would have worked better and been more spectacular, I think. They pulled off such a big blockbuster of a match just to have Brock beaten by a desk chair. But I liked the viral marketing attempt. I don't know how viral it actually went, but I liked the vrismilitude of it, and I liked seeing trainees getting featured. It's always fun seeing them pop up in backstage segments. Speaking of Jakara Jackson, we saw her in the back. She was the one woman I noticed backstage when Braun was storming out and everybody else stormed out because they couldn't have Jakara Jackson in the middle of all these men. Whereas the women who were involved at the PC, Alexis Letty and Monica Clisara, who had their videos featured, they were up in the Chase U cheering section. But just because this is what I do, the people that I recognized both in the, particularly tonight, although most of them, if not all of them, were in the videos as well, were Rixon Opont, and Opont I mentioned first because he was also the one that hoisted Grayson Waller up totally effortlessly in the video to carry him away from Norman Smiley. Chukwuesom Enekwesi, Kale Dixon, Luca Crucifino, who may have recently changed his name to Antonio De Luca, but I don't have that verified yet. Oba Femi, Bo Morris, Hayden Pittman, Kevin Ventura Cortez, and Dante Chen. And, of course, there were more than just that, but those were the ones that I saw and was just like, oh, hey, there they are. And I know that's just a list of random names to a lot of people, but for anybody who may be looking out for certain names to see when they're going to start popping up. Oh, Tank Ledger was also there. I didn't write him down because he's been on TV enough that I don't think of him as in, I guess, you know, Dante Chen as well, and I put Dante Chen's name down, so it's not like I had an Adam Pearce-like protocol going on here. I think if anyone listens to this in 5 years and they're like, oh, wow, Kale Dixon was in that, and now he's a big star. I don't know. There you go.
All right. Jakara Jackson, she was like front and center, too, in one of the shots, looking
yes,
almost excited.
Yes, she was.
Like almost excited, there was like this big ruckus about to happen. So, cool. All right, so there we go. There, let's see what else we got to talk about. Wendy Chu versus Electra Lopez. we'll talk about this because, well, we have to. I hate talking about Wendy Chu matches, but that is what it is. So we had Wendy Chu versus Electra Lopez. This was really more of a background for the kind of ongoing story with Electra Lopez and Valentina Feroz. We've seen Electra Lopez in past few weeks kind of try to get a little bit more of an edge on Valentina Feroz. She's obviously it was after Sangha had rejoined or reformed Indus Share with Veer Mahan, where you know, Valentina was trying to like talk some sense into him and like, you know, get him to like not be part of this faction, because they had kind of like a little friendship going backstage. We saw that happen, and obviously Sangha kind of just brushed her off. Electra Lopez, you know, was like, you know, I forget exactly how she worded it, but basically said, you need a bit of a backbone. Tonight, that's kind of what she told her was like, hey, come out, watch this match, and you know, basically see what it's like to have a bit of an edge or a bit of a backbone. Again, I forget how she worded it, but something along those lines. So we did see that we saw her come out and watch the match. Electra Lopez did pick up the win over Wendy Chu. And I think she got a relatively dominant win, considering how, you know, Electra Lopez in the ring about a year and a half ago was, or even maybe might have even like been like 6 months ago for that matter. You know, she hasn't been super great in the ring. I feel like she improved a little bit here. I don't think she was, I think it was a pretty decent match. Granted, you know, as much as I dislike the Wendy Chu character, the woman who portrays Wendy Chu, Karen Q, she's, you know, a fantastic wrestler. So I feel like having, you know, being opposite somebody like Wendy Chu, you know, certainly helped out Electra Lopez here. But we also saw Feroz and Electra Lopez backstage a little bit after this match. Blanking. What happened in that segment? Where it was afterwards, where Valentina Feroz and Electra Lopez were backstage and they were walking. I remember them walking, and I genuinely cannot remember what happened in the segment.
Wow, I honestly can't either.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I imagine that Valentina was saying something like, that's just not how I do things, right?
Actually, you know what? I think that's exactly what it was. It was pretty much exactly what it was. Because we ended up seeing Electra Lopez get the win after pulling a pair of brass knuckles out of her tights. And you know, Valentina Feroz saw that and, you know, kind of her conscience got the better of her. And basically was trying to tell the ref, and that was the distraction that Lopez used to use the knucks and pick up the win. So that's exactly what it was. She was telling her that you need to win at all costs, and Feroz was just kind of like, well, that's not really how I roll. So, you know, that's kind of that. As far as the match went, it was, you know, it was a match. Wendy Chu was, like I said, she was just really in the backdrop for the rest of the story, which, you know, I'm kind of fine with considering my love for the Wendy Chu character. But I'm really curious to see what happens here with Valentina Feroz and Lopez. Like, I can't see it becoming a team unless all of a sudden Feroz has like a real change of heart. I'm seeing this more as maybe a feud between the two of them. I don't know if that really excites me, but I am high on Feroz. Lopez, I like the character. I'm not super high on her in the ring. You know, I'm curious to see kind of where this winds up playing out. I know we talked a little bit about this earlier tonight. Do you have anything to add on this match?
Yeah, not too much more. I'm still not sold at all on Electra Lopez, although you are correct that, you know, she's better now than she was a year ago, so there's at least that, but I still feel like she was the worst wrestler that we saw wrestle tonight, and this was a night when we saw Hank Walker wrestle, although, to be fair, he was much better in his match tonight than we've seen him recently. He held his own with the Creeds, which is saying a lot, honestly, so there's that, but I don't feel like Feroz is the end game for whatever they're doing with Lopez here. They do weird things on house shows that don't necessarily make it to TV, like the aforementioned Kale Dixon pleading to be tag team partners with Grayson Waller. Grayson Waller not wanting it. Skip ahead. They end up tagging together at a future house show. You know, that's like purely house show storytelling, you know, for the live crowd, not going to make it to TV. But this, what we're seeing play out with Feroz is to an extent what has been playing out with Lopez and Lola Vice on house shows with the brass knucks and everything. So since we've seen the Easter egg of Lopez and Vice talking backstage in the background of other scenes on NXT TV, I'm imagining that that will eventually be the end game, that they are seeing enough in Lola Vice's progress and of course, you know, debuted on house shows at the end of October, had a couple of tag matches, has now had a couple of singles matches, and now tonight taped her first television match on Level Up. So that's the rate of progress that they are seeing her at, and I've had only good things to say on Bonus Point from what I've seen out of her. It seems like they are already planning her first NXT television storyline, and this is the primordial phase of it, that maybe Valentina Feroz ends up being an unwilling participant in Electra Lopez's stuff. Maybe she ultimately refuses her or refuses her sooner than that, but then Vice comes in and makes mincemeat of Feroz. That's how I'm seeing it play out.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Drew Gulak, Hank Walker versus the Creed brothers. So we've seen, earlier in the night, we saw Drew Gulak and Diamond Mine kind of like training together backstage. I ended up missing a little bit of this, the backstage segment. I had to take care of the dog real quick, but was the match made because it was like a friendly match? I wasn't actually sure how this match got made.
It was something to...
Tom, you there?
I couldn't get out of it.
Oh, there we are.
Oh, hey.
I lost you for a minute.
It was something to the effect of, you know, Gulak was bringing his brand of training to the Diamond Mine, and Julius showed him up, and Gulak took offense to that. And for some reason, the tag team we ended up with, because this is the story that they're for some reason telling, was Gulak and Walker, even though Miles Bourne is right there, and the other guy is Tavian Heights, and he has a legit wrestling background as well, so looking forward to seeing more from him. He's only had one Level Up match thus far that I've seen. I've got a little bit of a backlog, although I do not believe he's performed on any of the shows so far in January. I've got to catch up before recording the Bonus Point for this weekend. But Miles Bourne is the top name out of everybody I've been talking about on Bonus Point. He's the guy. Like, if you ask me, who are you excited about? I'll say Miles Bourne before anybody else. This dude has been wrestling since he was three. He's fantastic. And instead, Gulak is teaming with Hank Walker. So yeah.
Miles Bourne's deaf. I didn't know that.
Yes, he is. And so he, even though he's a rookie in the pros, as it were, although, you know, whatever. Even though he's a rookie, he's the one who calls his matches, since it kind of has to be that way.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. That's cool. I didn't realize. Because I'm not super familiar with him either, so I was just kind of Googling him as you're talking. Yeah. And that's cool. That's actually really cool.
It's cool. Sudhu Shah mentioned it a couple times on, you know, I guess to Nigel. You brought up Nigel earlier, and it's just, gosh, how unfortunate. That dude was just fantastic. But, you know, and Sudhu is now gone as well, although I'm honestly not sure whether that was his choice or the company's. I liked him. But Sudhu brought it up a couple times on commentary. But since then, they don't address it because it's not relevant to his character. It's not relevant to what he's doing. And they've even had him do a couple of backstage interviews. And so you can hear him speaking with the cued speech, but it's not pointed out. It's not like, oh, he sounds different, here's why. It's just, no, he does a perfectly fine job speaking. You can understand him. So they don't make it a part of his storyline because it doesn't have to be. I really like how they've been handling it thus far. And again, he's fantastic. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't complain that they are playing it slow and safe with him because maybe they see bigger things and they just want to wait for the right time.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So this match, like, I don't know. I'm not sure how we keep winding up with Hank Walker. So, like, I don't like Hank Walker, and I mean, I kind of like the character that, you know, coming from a story, you know, security guard, and now he's, you know, now he's having matches and things like that. Like, I kind of like that. It's more of like an organic introduction than just be like, hey, here we go. There's this new guy who's debuting and, you know, kind of showing some vignettes for a few weeks or whatever. So I kind of like that. But the fact that Hank Walker got as much offense as he did on the Creeds was, I don't know. I thought that was a little strange. Like, we haven't really seen him be super, super dominant, you know, in the ring or whatever just yet. And he kind of hung with the Creeds here, which I really didn't like. I thought the Creeds should have like decimated him. And I know that's kind of the story they're telling. He's trying to work with Gulak to get him, you know, make himself better and whatever. I just didn't find it super believable that he would be able to get the offense in that he got. I'd say give him some, but I feel like he got a little bit too much here. Plus, he stood out like a sore thumb in his button-down and jeans, everybody else's, you know, in wrestling attire. But, I, you know, that's kind of it for him anyway. But, yeah, cool. So that's kind of it there with that match. We did talk – actually, we didn't really talk about Fallon Henley, Kiana James versus Ivy Nile and Tatum Paxley. So we saw here tonight Kiana James and – Fallon Henley teaming up for the first time. We've seen it for the past few weeks now, them trying to coexist for considering, you know, they're kind of both with Briggs and Jensen respectively. So they're trying to coexist. And in this match, they kind of sort of did coexist. We saw a little bit, you know, back and forth at the beginning, like who's going to start the match, and, you know, some blind tags and things here, but they did wind up getting the win over Nile and Paxley. I'm as much as I love Nile and Paxley, especially Nile, I really wish we'd start seeing them get some more wins on TV. I feel like for the story that they're telling right now with James and Fallon, like it makes sense for them to get the win here tonight. But especially now that we learned later on in the night that they're going to be challenging for the tag team titles. I believe it was next week, they said, but it might be a Vengeance Day to be challenging for the tag titles. And that was after Jensen went to Shawn Michaels and requested that match for them. Fallon Henley was not super happy about that at first, but she came around pretty quick, and it looks like that's going to be a match we're going to see is Kiana James, Fallon Henley versus Casey Catanzaro, and I'm going to just keep saying it, Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter for the tag titles. But yeah, like this wasn't a bad match. I don't think here. I do like the pairing of Fallon Henley and Kiana James. I think, you know, they play really well off of each other. You know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see how this winds up playing out, if they're going to stay a team or, you know, if there's still going to be, you know, kind of rivals and, especially with, you know, Briggs and, Jensen in the background, how that's all going to play out if, you know, they do wind up, you know, facing one another again and kind of becoming enemies once again. But yeah, Tom, your thoughts on this match and the segments surrounding it.
Yeah. On the Henley and James side of things, I agree. I like the dynamic and, I guess I'll just state it briefly. It intrigues me. The storyline intrigues me. I don't have a hard prediction as to exactly where it's going, even though it seems kind of obvious that they'll implode again and, it'll threaten the friendship that the pure baby faces have going on because of the relationship with Brooks, which is likely to be revealed as just you know, James taking advantage of him, but it it intrigues me. And on the other side of things, it is very strange watching Ivy Nile take a pin. Maybe I'm just in that weird position that I imagine people who watch WWE main event also find themselves in when they watch the main roster, is that because I watch every episode of Level Up, to me, Ivy Nile is unstoppable. She has the most wins on that show. She's undefeated, both in singles and in tag. And like when JD McDonagh made that crack about like, you know, oh, Chase, you doesn't really have a great winning record, does it? You know, there, Andre. Yeah, Andre Chase, I'm not looking at my stats right now, but I'm pretty sure he's undefeated on Level Up in singles and in tag and has one of the best records on that show. And it's just like, it's just weird to me to hear that because I see him win all the time. But yeah, I understand that they're playing different roles on the main TV. So yeah, just an odd, like it doesn't feel right watching Ivy Nile get pinned. It just feels inherently wrong to see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even agree with that. You know, and like I'm not keeping up with Level Up, you know, like I was when it first debuted. But man, like I just want to see better for Ivy Nile. I really do. Like I feel like she's got so much potential. She's gotten so much better on the mic. You know, in the ring, she's getting better. I'm hoping that she's not like the bottom of the card. You know, for her career. And I don't think that'll be the case, but yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what, you know, where her career takes her.
It really will be. I will not be surprised if she makes it to the main roster and never becomes NXT Women's Champion, but she is somebody where like, if the rest of the roster was in a horrible bus accident tomorrow, she could easily be Women's Champion and carry it at the echelon that we're accustomed to seeing that championship carried. I mean, we've now seen her work all kinds of different matches and against all kinds of different opponents, and they're all really good. Like she's had good matches with Electra Lopez. That's how good she is. And then like she went over to NXT UK, wrestled Mako Satomura. That was the first time I ever saw her lose a match. And yeah, it's just, she's so damn good, and you never know where that dragon sleeper is coming from.
All right, we touched on it a little bit earlier in the night, but we'll talk about the Thea Hale appreciation or Thea Hale award ceremony, where they basically celebrating the fact that she won her first match. So they had a bit of a ceremony in the ring, Chase University. We saw Andre Chase, Thea Hale, Duke Hudson out there celebrating. And as that was happening, JD McDonagh made his presence known. He's kind of been toying with Andre Chase, Chase University, a couple weeks anyway. But we saw him come out basically upset that they're doling out participation awards for winning one match, which is funny because even before he came out, I was thinking that. I'm like, they're doing this because she won a match. Like, is that a little over the top? But whatever. At the same time, I was totally fine with it because give me more Thea Hale. As Tom was talking about earlier tonight, she gets it. She's fantastic. I love the charisma. So anytime I can see her on TV, I'm happy. But yeah, it ended up coming out. We ended up seeing Andre Chase versus JD McDonagh. I think it was right after this segment. It was after a commercial break. We ended up seeing JD McDonagh win using the Devlin side finisher. Basically Andre Chase is about to get the win when McDonagh had his foot on the rope. Hudson tried to interfere, but didn't quite pan out, didn't end up working out for him. Hudson ended up booking it backstage right in the middle of that, as we touched on a little bit earlier. At the time, it seemed like he might be just kind of saying, well, you know what, screw you, Chase University, I'm done. But he was actually getting a match. He was actually getting him, getting Chase University a match at the New Day in Tag Team Invitational next week. Whoever wins that will end up becoming part of the Fatal 4-Way Tag Match at Vengeance Day. Okay, that was a lot. The match itself, I thought it wasn't bad. It was a quick match. I think this was about 4 minutes or so. Chase, man, I love seeing Andre Chase out here. him against McDonough, I mean, there was some great technical wrestling. At the same time, I wasn't overly surprised that we saw Chase losing. I know, obviously, Tom was just saying he's used to seeing him winning on Level Up, but definitely playing a different character on NXT TV anyway, where, you know, Chase University just doesn't end up seeming to win a whole heck of a lot of matches. But yeah, you know, it wasn't bad. Probably going to wind up seeing maybe a little bit more with JD McDonagh and Andre Chase, if I had to guess, but that'll probably take place after next week with that New Day Tag Team Invitational. Tom, on Chase and McDonagh and the Thea Hale appreciation segment.
Yeah, as my stats load here. Oh, and they just did. I'll distract myself with those. Yes, without having watched the January episodes yet, so just 2022 Level Up, Andre Chase is 8-0. Three of those are singles, five of them are in tag, and that puts him at I never know whether it's sort by ascending or descending. That puts him at this is great podcasting. What do I – overall win percentage, that's what I'm looking for. He is the second most successful wrestler on Level Up behind Ivy Nile. So he is the winningest male wrestler on Level Up. I'll pick on Vic Joseph briefly because I can't resist because Andre Chase made the challenge, and then they cut to commercial with Vic Joseph saying, Chase McDonagh next. And it's like, well, that wasn't confirmed unless we're supposed to believe that you just had somebody in your ear saying that it was confirmed. And then they come back from commercial and he says, well, this match was made official during the commercial. It's like, well, it couldn't have been because you said it was okay. Vic, come on, buddy. And you know, that's probably how he was instructed to do it. Maybe he's well aware of the logical inconsistency, but whatever. I thought it was an entertaining segment. I thought it was an entertaining match, and I thought it was a nice touch that, of course, I focused so much more on the little nitpick about Vic in something that I overall liked. And so I just say, oh, it was entertaining, but it was. And I thought it was an especially nice touch that with McDonagh trying to drive a wedge between Hudson and Chase, that he pointed out when Chase was talking about people who believe in Chase U, Chase neglected to mention Hudson, which was probably we're probably meant to believe that it was inadvertent. It probably purely was designed to be an inadvertent slip, but McDonagh still picked up on it and made sure to point it out. So then when Hudson is going back, and I already stated that I figured we were going to get a different reveal there, which we did, it was still believable that perhaps he was actually leaving because Chase had neglected to mention his name as a Chase U believer.
Okay, and I think the last thing we'll talk about, we talked about a bit again earlier tonight with callers as well, was the opening match between Indy Hartwell and Tiffany Stratton. This, I believe, was Tiffany's first match back after injury against Indy Hartwell. It was last week. It was Indy basically kicked Tiffany Stratton out of her own locker room. She had her own locker room for some reason, and Indy basically kicked her out and turned it into the NXT women's locker room. Of course, that didn't sit well with Stratton, and we ended up getting this match here tonight. Indy had a bit of a chip on her shoulder in this match. I think she had a little bit more energy behind her. As her character has been, recently, she's been, has that chip on her shoulder, and she's kind of just been a little bit more aggressive overall. And I really like this version of Indy. So hoping to see more of that. But we did see Tiffany Stratton end up picking up the win here. I thought that was probably the right move to go, considering she is back. And as we were talking about earlier tonight, based on commentary, especially Booker T kind of comparing her to Rock, Cena, Hogan. I think that was the comparison anyway. Comparing to them, where she kind of fits in on the card and where they see her in the future. So I think it certainly makes sense for her to pick up the win here. Anything to add on Indy Hartwell versus Tiffany Stratton that we haven't already talked about?
You are correct. Her return to TV, she did have a couple of singles house show matches over the weekend, Wendy Chu and Indy Hartwell, respectively. Actually, it looks like Indy Hartwell beat her at the Saturday. Yeah, Saturday show. I know I looked at those results, but I didn't clock that one. I only write them down if they have to do with people I'm tracking on Bonus Point, and Indy and Tiffany are well past that point. But yes, she looks fantastic. Of course, she's just such a natural athlete. And I think she executes, or she implements her athleticism wisely rather than using it all the time. And that sounds like a backhanded comment about Sol Ruka. I think Sol Ruka is just so otherworldly talented when it comes to acrobatics that, like, that's what you want to see when she's out there. You want to see her doing those things. And she makes them look like no one else can make them look. Whereas Tiffany Stratton is incredible in a different way, and I like that she executes it, or there I go again, implements is the word I'm looking for, implements it more judiciously. And yeah, I just thought she looked fantastic in the match, and especially that finish. I'm sure we'd seen her do this before, or at least a version of it, but it really stood out tonight when, if I'm recalling correctly, she bounced on every single rope in the turnbuckle before getting to the top and going for the moonsault. It looked incredible, and she was going for it too. She was stomping down on those ropes. It looked so cool. And just, you know, I say it looked cool, but it also looked incredibly impressive and fits the character that she would be showing off in that moment, as well as executing a devastating move.
Right. I think that is going to bring us to the end of our show tonight. I know there's a couple segments we didn't wind up talking about, but we ended up going a little bit long here tonight, so I'm going to wrap things up. I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses for NXT, and you can catch those at pwtorch.com shortly after NXT goes off the air. Tom, who are you?
I'm the guy who had so much to say about Channing Lorenzo's vignette. So much, Nate. Oh,
I know.
No. what in the world is there to dig into there? But, I am Tom Staup, and I'll have a new Bonus Point for you on Torch VIP by the end of the week. And in the meantime, you can check out Speedway Video on YouTube for all the other stuff for the stuff that I am spending just about all of the rest of my time doing. If anybody is curious what that is, it's very time consuming, but I'm happy with how it's been shaping up in the new year.
All right, Tom, appreciate you coming back and filling in for Tom or for Bruce and Kelly, those slackers. It's good talking with you. It's been almost a year since you and I got to do this. It's been a good time.
I was happy the timing worked out, my friend.
Absolutely. All right, guys. And just because I can't think of anything else to say tonight, I'm going to steal Kelly's sign off. We'll see you in 7.